Hey guys,
we have a business coach coming in today about, do you communicate effectively as an entrepreneur? So we're here today in Studio U talking about how you communicate effectively as an entrepreneur. So what does that mean? What does that really grasp? What does that really mean? How are you going to get your point across? What are the things that you are, do you have to say to your people? Like, what are you saying to them? So when I say, are you communicating clearly, effectively to your people, to the people that are your customers, to your audience, are you making sure that the message that you want to come across is coming across? What are you selling? How are you selling it? What is the point of what you're selling? Like, you have to have a whole idea about this. And all of this comes in with planning what you're about to say. Right? So now you have to really, really, really get into the whole point in the whole premise of your plan, your idea, your everything about what you are presenting to people. So one, we're going to give you 5 steps on how to communicate effectively to your people. One, verbally communication is asking, the first thing is making sure that people really understand what you're trying to ask them. So sometimes you have to ask them, do you understand? Do you, how do you feel about this? Does that make sense to you? These are things that I say all the time when I'm communicating with my friends, my family, and even in business. And this was a sales thing I did years ago that I had to do because they were like, if you have to make sure you get some guesses out of people. So how are you communicating? What are you saying? Making sure, how are you communicating? What are you saying that is it coming across the way you want it to come across in your, with your clients? All right. So with all of that being said, every time you communicate with someone, you have to make sure. They in training and customer service training, they always teach you, so repeat yourself. Repeat what your client told you, what the problem was. That's why sometimes when you're talking to customer service, it gets frustrating because they're like, so your problem was your phone doesn't cut on. That's what I just said, Rich. That is exactly what I just said. My phone does not cut on. So why are you repeating it? They have to repeat it so they make sure that you understand what they're saying and what they understand what the problem is totally. So those are the things that you have to do to communicate clearly. So one is to make sure your idea, what you're saying is portrayed clearly, is understandable, is in a good English language. The second thing is sometimes you have to repeat what you are saying again. And then sometimes you may have to say it in different ways, in different wording, and in different ways so that people will totally understand what is going on. You have to say it in different verbiage is what I would say. That's the better language for that. You have to say it in different verbiage. So when you are saying it and someone's like, oh, I don't understand, what color is the TV? Black. So that's the simplest way to say that, right? You would think that, right? And then, but some people you will have to communicate. So the thing on the wall that shows those movies that you like to watch, what color is it? And they're like, oh, yeah, it's black. Well, but sometimes it has colors in the TV. I'm not saying what color is on the TV. I'm saying what color is the actual TV. Does that make sense? So, see how I say, does that make sense? So those are the things that you have to say to your customers, to your clients, to make sure you are giving them the proper ideas, the proper services, the proper ways of communication. The email communication, we have all got to the point where we email as we text, or we text as we email. We're using you instead of Y-O-U. We're using R instead of, you're using emojis. Like, how did y'all get the fact that a eggplant emoji is supposed to be a penis? Who came up with that process, and how did that go viral? Because to me, eggplant, when I used to, people would say eggplant, I'd be like, eggplant, why do you want eggplant? And then someone had to tell me that. So you have to make sure when you're sending these emojis and sending these funny faces, like, oh, I'm going to tell you when it really got me. So the crying face. So it's laughing and crying. And then there's the cry face, right? I didn't know the difference. I would be sending somebody a laughing while crying, or make you laugh while crying face, thinking that it was a sad face. She's crying. What does it have to do with crying and laughing? I didn't get that. It took me times and times and times to get that. So with all of this being said, sending, making sure you are communicating with the people you're communicating with has to be very clear and very concise and understanding. Emojis, WTF, what the fuck, where, you know, how nice. All of these acronyms that we use now, make sure that they are, or where are you at? What is that one? I forgot that one. But so it's Y-U at, or W-Y-A. What? Like, why can't we just type, where are you at? I'm just saying. So when you're communicating with your people, with your customers, with your people, please don't use acronyms. Use the words that actually make sense. Verbalize the words that are coming out your mouth. Use real people words. Don't use your slang. Don't use your craziness. Just use whatever. Don't use the emojis unless the people are familiar with you and they know exactly what the emojis are. Now, the middle finger emoji is obvious. It's a middle finger. We know what that means. Unless you're from Britain or another country, you know in America what that means, right? So use a thumbs up. You know what the thumbs up emoji means. Good job. You know, cool, great. Always positive. Thumbs up always is a positive emoji. So those are the things that you have to actually put out there and to say to make sure that the people really know what you are saying, what you're trying to portray. And that's just emojis. Like, so when you're using the number three is when you are using communication, communicate with words, not symbols, unless the person knows exactly what those symbols are. All right, guys, the next thing, number four is make sure that your ideas match. Everybody's ideas can be totally different and are very unique. So make sure your idea and their idea match. When you're communicating with something that's going on, when you're communicating a project, when you're communicating a idea to people, make sure your idea matches with what they want. So I want something that is a little spicy. All right, so what does spicy mean? We have a cinnamon kind of spice. We have a hot spice. We have you want it to smell spicy and smell. There are so many variants of what the spicy can mean or what a spicy is. So what does spicy mean to you? What does brown mean to you? Because there are so many different shades of brown out there, right? So you got brown, you got tan, tint is a shade of brown, but it's a lighter shade. You have light brown, dark brown. What is a brown? What is light skin? Some people say, I need some people to look more ethnic. What kind of ethnicity does that mean? Do you want dark-skinned people? Do you want them with curly hair? Do you want dark-skinned people with straight hair? Do you want dark-skinned people with short hair? Do you want lighter-skinned people, or do you want light-skinned people with curly hair? What does ethnic mean to you? Those words can mean so many different things depending on that person's ethnicity and what they have going on in their life and how they are being portrayed and what their vision is as a person. Because you might think that it is a dark skin or a light skin or brown, but it's not. Because they're like, no, I want it to be this kind of brown or that kind of brown or that kind of shade or that kind. So you have to make sure that you portray and what you're saying to your customers are out. I want a modern look. You're an interior designer. They say, I want a modern look. What does modern look like? Can you explain that to me? What does that look like? Is it straight lines? Is it curvy lines? Is it retro? Because now retro and modern are very similar, but then I look at it being an 80s baby and it's retro. So you have to think about all of these things and all of this way of conveying your way. Colors, peach, rose gold. Now they have all these new names for all these new colors. And so what does that mean? Because you have to make sure, unless you're giving them the actual color line or the color number, the CMYK number or the pixel number or whatever number you're giving them, if you don't give them that exact number, that Pantone number, people really don't know what you want in colors. So you have to make sure you verbalize it. Red, how many shades of red are there? How many, if you go to Home Depot and say, I want some red paint, they're going to show you a wall that has 500 different shades of red. Do you want a scarlet red? Do you want a light red? Do you want a red that's a little bit more pink? A red that's a little bit more blue? A red that's a little bit more blackish in it? Do you want a red with some orange in it? So there's so many different shades of colors and things. So when you are communicating these things to your customers, you need to make sure that you are effectively communicating it to them when you're talking to them. And we're talking about colors right now. I know that sounds simplistic, but it is very important because there's so many different shades, and that is a great way to understand variants. Like, do you want a blood red? Or what kind of red? Or what kind of blue? Or do you want an aqua, a teal, a snow, a light blue, a dark blue? What does all of that mean to you? How can you actually portray all of those colors and get those out there to your customers, make them understand what you're doing? All right, guys? So those are the things that you have to communicate with when you are dealing with your customers. Now, and no, you're like, well, I don't do colors. I don't have to deal with anything with colors with my customers. Let's get outside of that. Let's understand that you have to really know it's not about colors in this conversation. It's more about understanding exactly what they want if you're doing custom products, lettering, shaping, sizing, all of that. Customer service skills, what things cost. Are you telling them the cost up front? Are you telling them cost behind the door? What is the cost of an item? So if I say, hey, you can come, we can get this project, you can come consult with me, all right? So this website will cost you $1,000. And this $1,000, you get A, B, C, or D, and D. Right? But then The customer comes and says, I want E, F, and G. That doesn't really come with it. So how do you communicate to your customer that E, F, and G does not come with the items that you're purchasing? That is almost like you going to a restaurant and say, I want a pizza. I want a cheese, a slice of pizza, right? And it comes with onions. A regular slice of pizza is tomato sauce and cheese. That is what's $5.99, right? Anything above that is $2 each. Any other piece is $2 each. So your one slice of pizza now has gotten up to $10 because you added mushrooms, onions, and pepperoni to the pizza. Now, if that wasn't communicated well in that whole thing, then nobody will know that this is why this pizza costs this much. Does that make sense? So you have to make sure that your people really understand what you're saying and how you feel about it. So all of that has to do with the levels of communication that you're giving your customers, all right? Making sure you're clear, making sure your verbalization is very clear and concise in your communication. All right. Those are some of the great things. Tonight we're gonna have Mr. Rick come on here. He's in a ministry. He has a lot, he's a nonprofit. He has some books out there that he has written. So he's gonna come, and he's not an entrepreneur, but he has a nonprofit, and he's gonna come talk about his nonprofit tonight and how to communicate, how he communicates his mission correctly. Because as a nonprofit, you have to teach people how you're giving to this cause, if whatever your cause is. So if it's breast cancer, why would I donate to your nonprofit to give for breast cancer? What are you doing for the people? Why are you doing this for the people? Are you doing it for research? Are you giving it to breast cancer research? Or are you actually giving it to the breast cancer patients? Are you giving it to, why would you give it to research when you could give it to patients? Those are the people who are in more struggle. How are you helping those people? What are you doing for those people? What is your true purpose of helping those people? How much of this donation that I give, if I give you $1,000, how much is this going to go to that person? And how much is it going to administration? Because nonprofits can be like a switchblade. Like, they can do good and they can do bad, depending on who's running it. So those are the things you have to really communicate with people when you're asking for donations. What is the purpose of this donation? So those are the things that you have to really go into when you're communicating effectively with your customers, with sharing your mission. What is your story? How do you feel about it? How do you want your story to be portrayed in this line of work? That is how you have to communicate effectively. What do you want people to think about you, to say about you, to feel about you when you're talking to them? And that, a lot of that has to do with energy. Energy has a very strong effect upon that. Because when people are, you have a high energy, woo! Sometimes when you have a high energy and you're trying to talk about a low point, it's bad. So sometimes you really have to understand what you're talking about when you're communicating to that person so that your energy can match that. If I was right now jumping around and doing cartwheels and backflips, and doing bunny hop dances, bunny hop dances, and we're talking about communication with that, would you understand that? Would that make sense to you? So when you are communicating, when you're advertising with different people, with different things, those are the things that you have to do to make sure that you are communicating well and making sure your mission is going across. Now, I know we all have all these new TikTok videos excuse me, and these Instagram reels that happen, right? So we're doing these dances, and we're doing these song plays, and we're doing these voiceovers of other people saying different things, and then you try to ad-lib these little point things. Sometimes those don't add up. They don't make sense. They don't work properly in what you're trying to communicate, depending on what is going on in that whole realm. So you have to really, really hone in on what you're trying to say and who you're trying to captivate. Just because somebody likes this song, you like this song, you like this, does not mean it works for your product or your ideas that you're putting out there. So make sure that when you are communicating those things and putting those things out there, that it really, really, really makes sure it makes sense to what the message that you want to put out. It always has to make sense to that message of what you're going to put out, what you're trying to say, your thought process, your whole emotions, your energy, all of that. It all has to make sense. You can't sell tampons and be talking about dancing. I mean, I guess it can work in the limelight, but sometimes it's like, oh, absorbent, odor-free, da-da-da-da. With somebody dancing, it may not come across the right way, the right ideas. So make sure when you are communicating with whomever, you have your mission, you have your idea, you have your process put in place so that they understand exactly your mission. It's like GPSing. You need to really know where you're going. You need to know where you're going, where you want to tell them, what the focus is, what's your purpose of this level of communication, and why you're pushing so much forward to this idea, this thought, and everything else. So doing business, you have to make sure that they understand where they're going. They understand their purpose. They understand why they're doing this. They understand their whole idea. They understand why do you want them to be a part of your team? Why do you want them to be on their level? Why do you think the way that they think? Why do you want to work with this person? These are the things that you have to do. So it has to be by your story, your ideas, your likes, your passions, your drives, and anything else that you're putting out there in life. So if that makes sense to you guys, send me some love, send me some hearts, and let me know. If I sound like I'm rambling, let me know. It's been a very, very long day. I've been in a lot of sessions with different people doing different things today, very emotional sessions. So just let me know. So we're about to bring Mr. Rick online right now. And we're going to bring him on right now. So let's speak with him.
Hello?
Yes. Hi. How are you?
Hey, how you doing?
I am awesome. I'm awesome. So tell us a little bit about who you are and what products you have or your books that you have out there. And how do you communicate what you're doing effectively?
Okay, I'm Rick Green. I'm a husband and a father of six boys. And we just got a one-year-old baby girl last year from the foster care system. She's our great niece, but we didn't want her to get lost in the system. I've lived in Cincinnati my whole life. I'm the baby. I'm number 11. And I love God and I love people.
Wow. Big families all around.
And right now, I have 4 books that I published, probably 30 or 40 more already written in my head. I didn't know as a young boy that's what God had called me to do. I see my calling now, but there was a lot of detours along the way in my life. My autobiography, you know, really explains who I am and why I am. I was an alcoholic and drug addict for 16 years, but yesterday on June 15th was 23 years that God freed me. I never say he cleaned me because I was never dirty. I was the victim of my own poor choice.
Awesome. Yes, beautiful words.
You know, and that today I have a wife and 2 kids at home that really love me. That's the beautiful side of Rick Green. The downside is, you know, I try to celebrate yesterday every year of 23 years being free, but it's hard to because I lost 4 older sons because of my addiction that live in Cincinnati with me, and, you know, we don't talk, and I get it. I've never blamed them. I gave them a plate they didn't ask for, and I'm just trying to be the best version of Rick Green that I can this day, and I'm praying that God will bring us together one day, and I believe that he will, but I can't stop living for the 2 sons and the wife I have here at home either.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes that home, what you did in the past really hones in on how your kids developed and how hurt that they are. And I was having a conversation with somebody today about that. And sometimes your childhood brings up craziness in your life. And then sometimes, you know, the things that you have done, you're thinking you're doing the best that you can, and it's probably not, but, I mean, it is what you know, right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the one main reason I never really blame my parents for the path that I chose, even though, you know, I was raised in a house. I remember one of the first memories. I must have been 3 or 4 years old. Our house always smelled like a bar. I didn't realize that until I got 21 and was able to go into a bar. The first time I went into a bar and got a drink, it took me all the way back to 3 or 4 years old. And I said, that's that smell. That's that scent I was used to my whole life. Our house was always drinking, you know, smoking, gambling, dice, and pool. Our house was the party house. It was never really meant for children, but, I mean, as a child, you're stuck. You go where your parents go.
Right.
But I can't blame them because out of 11 kids, not all of the children were alcoholics and addicts. That's why I don't buy that where people say, well, a lot of times the way you were raised has a lot to do with the way you turn out. I'm not really a big fan of that. I look back at some of the choices I specifically made that I wasn't forced to make that led me down a road of destruction. I chose to cope with alcohol and drugs. Some of my siblings didn't. That's not my parents' fault,
right?
In my opinion. I think that's Rick's fault, and I think you got to be man or woman enough to accept what you did to you or you'll die there. And I want to grow, and I think you only grow from truth.
But that is the real truth of accepting your choices.
Yes.
I always refer back to Lucifer. You know, I don't know if you watch that show, Lucifer is the devil, and he's like, what is your desires? And he hones on to that. That is one of his biggest things. And the crazy part is, in watching these episodes and watching these shows, it talks to you about free will. God gives you free will from birth, even though, I mean, at birth you don't know you have free will, but God gives you free will to make a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And when you become an adult, you have free will to do good, bad, indifferent in your whole life, right?
Yeah.
So
you're absolutely right.
Nobody can make you an alcoholic. Your traumas may lead to that. You're trying to repress something may lead to that,
mm-hmm.
but you can stop drinking when you choose to. It may not be as easy as my words to say, oh, stop drinking today, because I'm saying it to you and you're enough, you know, you're a former alcoholic, but you're like, yeah, it's a process. Everything is a process because you have to deprogram yourself. And from that, from the level of what caused you to drink, you have to understand why you drink in the first place to understand how to stop. Right?
You know, since I know exactly what it was now that I'm older, you know, it's like, I tell pastor at church sometimes, I tell my wife, I don't know, is a part of me crazy? I chase this ghost I can never have. I'm 57 years old. My mother never told me she loved me. My mother dead and gone, and I'm still chasing that. I just want to hear it one time. I know I can't have it, but I still chase it. It don't make sense, but I still chase
it. No, it does.
I don't want to hear it from nobody else. I want to hear it from her.
Right.
And I was trying to drown that pain out, you know, as a teenager, as a kid. And that thing, I know she was dead and gone. And I don't know. It's just, of course, people tell me, you know, my wife and uncle, aunt, you know, but you want to hear from that one person.
Right.
But I mean, I can only speak for why I did what I did. And I don't know why other people did what they did. I wanted that so badly. I was obsessed with getting that from her, and she was just determined not to give it to me. And no, sadly, now at 57, I know how to love my mother, and I wish I could tell her, and I can't. Now I know how to love her. It was hard to love a woman that was always so mean, nasty, abusive, and vulgar. You know, I was always MF and B. I was never Rick. People don't realize words hurt worse than a hand do sometimes. You know, when you're 4 or 5, your mother cuts you out, it hurts. And I didn't know how to process that at 5 and 6. I didn't know what to do with that. Because I thought it was coming from the one person that was supposed to love me. And that's why I wrote down the biography. But I also learned, looking back over my life, up to this day, God was always in the midst. He never left me. Of course, I didn't understand that at 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. I'm looking back. He spared me. I remember being in alleys in Cincinnati 3, 4 in the morning, some of the roughest, most violent part, and people getting shot, stabbed, and murdered. And God never allowed it to happen to me. And I said, God, you love me that much?
Yes,
I remember going to funerals of people that had OD'd, and I was mad because the preacher was taking too long, and my addiction, I wanted to get high. I'm looking back at my life, and he was just taking too long. And God kept sparing me, and I said, God, you love me that much. And on June 15th of 1998, I never forget it, in a jail cell in Cincinnati, Ohio, I cried out to the God, maybe for the first time in my life, sincerely. And he heard me. I remember my exact prayer. I never asked God to remove alcohol and drugs. I had God to remove my desire for alcohol and drugs. And that's exactly what he did. And I never went back.
That is exactly.
One time crying in a jail cell, I asked God to specifically remove my desire for alcohol and drugs. And I never wanted it again.
Wow.
And I knew I had to tell people that God is greater than any mixer or whatever word you want to use that Satan can mix up and put in front of you. God is more powerful than that. I'm just saying that because I know it. I had to live in hell for 16 years, and by the grace of God, he came with me, and he protected me even in hell. Now I have to tell people there is a way out and no way out. You don't have to die an alcoholic and an addict. You know, I believe we choose to. Like, I don't understand accidental overdose. Is that possible when you purposely put heroin in your arm? Is that possible? I'm just asking a question. If you purposely put meth in your veins, is that possible?
I commend heroin dealers for the simple fact that you are taking the time to straighten, to get your mind straight enough to put a needle of any size that you may or may not have in a vein that could be rolling, could be moving, is unstable into your body. And inject the drugs. Now, you've done this hundreds and hundreds of times. You even lasted your arms. You know what I mean? You even took the time to pump your hand up to get a freaking vein out. Like, you know how much drugs it takes you to get you to point A, point B, or point C. Now, the thing is when you are chasing that high, I've never done heroin. I've never done any of the big drugs like that. I mean, weed, okay, drink, okay. But that's about all of my levels of drinking and alcoholism or addiction, or not, I'm not, I won't say addiction, but whatever it is. That's all of my usage, I'll say that. So, but at the end of the day, if you are able to lacerate your arm, put a needle in a small vein that you have to look at, and then shoot yourself up, you, and you've done this more than once, and then kill yourself, you probably know what you're doing. What you say?
Well, it's going to happen. You know, that's, I'm not trying to down nobody or talk about nobody. For me personally, I had to learn to love me more than I love any of Satan's poison. To me, it was that simple. I had to learn to love me. I had to believe that I was worthy of a good life. I had to believe that I was worthy of a good wife. I had to believe I was worthy to be a good father. I had to believe those things to change my life. And God kept showing me. And I kept ignoring it. I kept ignoring him. And God kept sparing me. And I just couldn't get down my... I'm going to funeral after funeral after funeral. I'm like, God, I was just getting high with him, you know, 2 days ago, and you keep sparing me. And God just kept nudging at me and nudging at me. And I just thank God that he loved me that much. And now I have to tell the world, you have to learn to love yourself. I can talk to you and preach to you all day. I can't teach you how to love you. I'm not qualified to teach you that. I can show you how to love myself. You have to learn how to love you. Nobody can teach me how to love me. I had to do it myself. It's inside work. All the seminars and all the programs and all your, it's cool, it's fine, it's dandy. I'm not knocking them. You're going to leave there the same as you went in if you're not putting no value on you.
Thank you. I agree.
You start valuing you, and I guarantee you something's going to change.
Yes.
I'm more than just a syringe. Yeah, I'm more than just some powder on the table. I'm more than just a bottle of rum. I'm more than that. I'm more.
You are.
You got to start claiming who you are. But it took me 16 years to realize that. And by the grace of God, he spared me. It was nothing I did because I was on self-destruction the whole 16 years. I wasn't eating right. I'm like 120 pounds. I wasn't looking right. I was on total self-destruction mode. But God just kept nudging at me, kept nudging, and he kept whispering, I created you for a better purpose. And I finally started listening. I found out so much of addiction is an illusion.
It is.
That's what I found out myself. I started listening to the lies that you're worthless, you're useless, you'll never be nothing, you're by an addict, it's your family history. All these illusions, I found out that's all they were. Because you can't speak over my life, Satan, because you didn't create me.
Facts.
You didn't create me. God did.
Facts.
But, you know, it took time for me to get there. It was not overnight. You know what I mean? Once I realized that, it changed my life. And I want to tell people that God loves you and I love you. I just want you to love you.
Yep. That is very powerful. And I had a session earlier with a lady today that we were talking about that. Been through a lot of abuse, been through a lot of trauma in life. And the other part about loving yourself is forgiving. I mean, guys, I know this is a totally off subject. We're supposed to be talking about communication. But at the end of the day, this message has been, is supposed to be put out there for somebody that is listening or somebody who needs to hear this. So I'm not going to stop the message just being put out, obviously, because it's supposed to be put out. And this has been the energy that has been coming through my whole day today. So I am an energy person. So all day I have been listening to people's stories about trauma and about things that happen in their life and about things that they're supposed to change and how they're changing and all of those other things. So I'm sorry that we're off topic, but this story really kind of needs to be put out there. Maybe my energy brought this out or from whatever has been going on, but this is what needs to be said. So I'm going to allow it. But yes, in life, I wrote my book. That was my book called By Pookie. I wrote my book. You can find it on Amazon and you can order it on my website. By Pookie was designed to remove the negativity, the negative people out of your life. And it took me years to write this book because some of it was self-healing. Sometimes when you write your books and write all of these things, it's about self-healing. It's about getting your emotions out that you may have never gotten out. Just how you were asking for your mother's love, and that's why you may have drunk. I mean, that was the beginning part of it, but that's not what led it to what it did as you were an adult. You found other things to fester to create that callus. It's like a cancer, right? You agree?
Mm-hmm.
And you found other
things. Oh, yeah, no doubt.
That were cancerous to you, and you just fed off of that, and you fed off of that. But everything channels back to that one trauma state that happened to you as a child. And you have to really, really, really be strong enough to deprogram yourself to really get that out of your head, to get that out of your mind, to make you a better human being, and to actually hear those voices in your head, actually hear what your message and what your purpose is for the world. Because everybody has a purpose, right?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. You're absolutely right.
Sometimes your purpose is your story. You have to go through certain things to actually to be able to tell your story. And there's so many other people out here who have that similar story that they think they're all alone. And is your ministry, is that kind of what you're doing?
Yeah, you know, sister, the last 2 years of my mother's life, most of my life, I hated my mother. Like the last 3 years of her life, daddy had passed, and I found out she was broken, bitter, and lonely. Because my mother never worked. No, daddy always took care of everything. And, I mean, I really love daddy. He's like my boy, my best friend, my cat. And I promised him I would do what I can, take care of best I can, something ever happened to him. Both mama's kidneys failed, so she was on dialysis a lot, and we had to put her in this nursing home because she needed medical attention. Every day before my 12-hour shift, I had to go spend time with mama. And I did it because I didn't want her to be alone out of promise to daddy. And this is how God chips at your heart. God pulled out the chisel. Every time I went and saw mama, I started loving her. She started removing hate from her. I started hating her. I started liking her. I started wanting to be her friend. I started feeling sorry for her. She was a bitter, older, broke-down version of this mean bully that raised me. She was almost childlike. And I remember she would cry like, Rick, do you have to go to work? I'm like, Mom, I got to go. You know, I got mortgage. I got a wife, I got a kid. And I remember she was just almost crying when I wanted to leave. And it just touched me. It's like everything had reversed. So I found myself giving her what she wouldn't give me. And it just felt right. It felt natural. And I thank God for those days because I didn't want to hate her no more.
Right.
And like my brother told me last year, once I'm angry, why would you wait so long to tell me? My older brother told me, he said, Rick, I got something to tell you. I'm like, what's that? He said, the reason why mama raised us the way she did, because my grandpa hated her and was mean and abusive to her. I'm like, so you kept that for 50 years? I mean, because now it all makes sense, just repeating the cycle. I never understood why she gave birth to these children and just hated them. But now it makes sense. Mm. It's just repeating that cycle. And I wish we really could have been friends. But, you know, so much of my life, I didn't understand why the venom and hate came from. I used to ask myself, why did you birth me to hate me? I used to ask myself that. But, you know, it made sense once my brother told me that. My grandpa was pretty mean, abusive to her. Man, oh, man. And I do believe in generational curses. I believe she just kept it alive. But, you know, and I know that was exactly my way of escaping it. I remember the first time I saw one of my father's beers, I got tired of being depressed and angry and not liking myself because the words are always so hurtful and hateful and belittling. Actually, I started to believe the words she was calling me, that's what I was. I didn't believe I was worthy of love. I didn't believe that I was worthy, you know, to be cherished, to be held, to be played, to be tickled like a kid. I didn't believe I deserved that because I saw my mother say it. And, you know, you hear a lie so much, it becomes a reality. I'm like, well, maybe she's right. Maybe she's right because that's all I hear is abuse 7 days a week. And I remember the exact time I snuck one of my father's beers, and I didn't know, you know, the Pandora box I was opening. I was young and naive, like 11 or 12. I had no idea what I was doing. And, you know, I had no idea that it was just a downhill spiral from there. And it was my quick escape from the pain. And after a while, it wasn't enough no more. Then it went to weed. Then it went to powder cocaine. Then it went to crack. After a while, beer just wasn't doing it.
Right.
You know, it's just you want to feel good, or either you want to escape the pain. I can't put my finger on which one, or maybe it's a little bit of both.
You just
want it to be numb.
You want to be
numb. Yeah, you just want it to be numb.
Right. You don't want it to be relevant, because when you get that drinker's high or that high that you get, it's one of those things that you forget. You forget the reality of where you're at. Reality is clouded over. So you're like, this is great. I'm feeling good. I'm happy. I don't even like you, but I'm gonna talk to you because you seem like you're fun right now. No, in real life, you really don't fuck with that person. You know what I mean?
But
when you're high and when you're drunk, it's like, yes. So that's why I always tell people in this whole situation and this whole time, you have to Try hanging out with somebody sober that you hang out with drunks all the time. And if you can still hang out with them sober, then they're probably good people. But if you can't hang out with them sober, then that's a problem.
Yeah, but you're right, too. And I tell you what, I would like to find out whoever started that words don't hurt. I would just like to take them behind the shed for a minute. Words do hurt.
They do.
I had to go through a whole childhood to learn about words that hurt. Don't tell me words. They break a 4-year-old. They break a 5-year-old. They break a 7-year-old.
They break a grown person.
They crush you. I'm like, man. And that's why to this day, you know, sister, to this day, me and my wife, our two sons, we don't cuss. And I told my before we got married, I said, I don't cuss, and I won't marry a woman that cuss. I refuse that any woman verbally abuse my children. I'm not going to do it. And we had to agree on that. My children will not go through what I went through. They will not.
I tell you.
It's horrible. Words can be very, very horrible.
Those are verbal abuse and yes, I 100%, because I was talking to a lady earlier today. She had physical abuse. But she didn't understand how physical abuse equals the same as the verbal abuse. But I'm going to have to control the conversation. I have about 3 more minutes in the actual podcast that we have to go through. And I love your conversation, and we'll have to probably bring you back on another session where we're really talking about you, like the story and everything that you have going on. I would love if you tell people where they can find your book, how they can help support your story and understand, like, you're not out here alone. Like, read my stories, plural. Yeah. And learn where can they buy your book? Where can they find you? How can they follow your ministry if that is what they choose to do? Where can they do that all
okay.
at?
Okay, so I'm so sorry for taking you off track. All of my books are available on Amazon, and my website is spiritworksministry.com. And I have a Spirit Works Ministry Facebook page. And the ministry, you know, right now we're downtown every Monday in Cincinnati, Ohio. Me and my wife make 40 to 60 bag lunches in our kitchen. And we feed the homeless because God told me to in June of 2019. He hadn't told me to stop. And I think I get more joy out of it than they do. I truly have learned to love God and love people. This thing called life is bigger than Rick Green. And I would thank anyone that chooses to support the ministry. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you for having me tonight.
You are very welcome. And Rick, we're going to have you on again. Please share this with everybody so they can hear it. It's going to be live on my page, and I'll share this message with you as well. Please share it to any and everybody who's out there who needs to hear this. And we truly, truly appreciate your story and love your story. And I think a lot of people needed to listen to this. A lot of people need to hear it and go from there. Does that make sense? A lot of people, I had this conversation with somebody earlier that I spent all day with her having a conversation about how family affects you. So it was like, and then you come with this, it's just like, wow. So I'm going
to
make sure
it was meant to be.
It is. And there is there. Divine energy is energy. So I wish you the best in your endeavors. Stay sober, stay well, stay healthy, stay prosperous. And everybody, please go purchase his book and support him and share this ideas to everybody that you have out. Thank you. And you have a good night, Rick, okay?
All right. Thank you, and God bless you all.
Thank you. Wow, that was a very powerful, inspirational moment, and I'm hoping that whoever needs to listen to that and hoping the person got that out there to them and to their ideas and to their mind. So please support Rick Green. I will put the link in my bio. I'll put the link everywhere. Please support him. Please purchase his books. They're on Amazon. I'll put the link in the bio. Everybody has a story. Sometimes you just have to take the time to tell your own story. All right, guys. Talk to you guys later and see you later. Bye-bye.